This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. All right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go.
This episode is brought to you by Magic Spoon, baked by Melissa and Modern Fertility. We are so happy to have them on board, making the show a possibility.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin.
And we're your hosts.
Let me show you. Love is love. If you don't have to make a family by taking a traditional ride. If these ovaries could talk, you would say. How do I get the sperm through custom?
I am a lesbian. So gay. We need to tell our story.
It's not your nuclear family anymore. It's not just your mom and dad thing.
We're not ruining these little humans.
Not for the gay reason. Just because we stick.
All right.
Here we are. Hi, guys.
Ooh, guess what?
What?
Before we get into anything,
you guys,
we have to announce the winner of our Instagram giveaway.
We had a giveaway and you entered.
If These Ovaries Could Talk swag, you entered.
And we have a winner.
Carrie Kane, who goes by the handle Carried Away 19.
Carried Away.
By the way, that's a great name because it's C-A-R-R-I-E-D.
Carried Away 19. Good job. Congratulations. You're going to get
a t-shirt.
And a mug.
And a pin.
And a sticker.
All right. Thank you for following us on Instagram.
Thank you.
Ovaries_talk. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Guys, sometimes we tell a story here or something like this, but our guest is too frigging big to hear about us.
Big, big treat what's coming up. Mm-hmm. You guys remember Stacey Enchin from our very first live event we did? It was Stacey Enchin.
At the WNYC Green Space.
Yes. And
it was epic.
It was fantastic. She is a powerhouse. Mm. She is a fire rocket. You never know where she's going
to
go.
I said this before. My friend Jana, shout out to Jana from episode one, said Stacey Enchin is the kite. You just hold on.
That's literally what happened.
It's true. She wanted to come back.
She... Who'd have thunk?
Can you believe it?
Yeah, so she's back, guys. She's here.
She's got a new book out called Crossfire, A Litany for Survival.
And it's a book of her poetry.
Yeah. And so she said she wanted to come back, and we were like, oh, my God, yes.
Yeah,
we were
please
gonna,
do.
And so we went in with this whole idea. We're going to flip the script and talk about women and body issues.
And she was going to interview us.
Yeah.
And it was going to be this whole thing.
Being just a lot of chatter.
Yeah. Stacey Ann does what she wants.
Yeah.
And she talks. And we go with it, basically.
And it was great, though. We ended up talking about some really well-timed stuff, because it's Black History Month, about, like, racism and how to talk to your kids about that.
Systemic racism.
I mean, I feel like we're just going to start giving away the podcast. We should actually let Stacey Ann say it.
I know. We never actually give away this much. So let's just bring her in.
Oh, but before.
Oh, don't forget.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. We took video of her during the recording. So we have some video over on our Patreon account. And we also have video at the end. She reads a poem from her book.
So stay tuned for the end of this podcast.
All the way to the end.
Because you're going to hear this poem that is, like, super powerful.
So powerful.
Amazing.
We were just, like, silently staring at her creepily.
Which is, like, I think that happens to her a lot.
But we have that video also on patreon.com/ovariestalk. So
if you're not over there,
if you're
come
not
on
in
over
that community,
if you're not in that community yet,
you're missing out.
Come on over.
Okay, enough of us, right?
Yeah, let's talk to Stacey Ann Chen.
Stacey Ann! Here we go. Stacey Ann Chen, take it away. We're so scared.
You're like absolutely fucking crazy.
So I love how crazy you think we are. It's like my favorite thing. Like, I've been trying to figure out how to work in the quote from the live show we did with you.
What did you call us? Nut jobs? Or, no,
like
not
something.
Nut.
Like there's, we have some quote about you just being like, what the fuck is wrong with these girls? And I'm like, where can we put it? On the back of our book? Because it's so amazing. Our publisher's against it for some reason.
Well, the publishers are at best conservative.
At best. It's totally.
I mean, but generally as a business, you know, they don't want to take the most risks. But
do you get edited highly by your publisher?
No.
But
people who want to edit me don't want to publish me.
They don't want what you have to say.
No. The fuck, the sex, the vagina, the ovaries, like the blood. I mean.
Yes, the pubic hair.
The pubic hair. You know.
Oh my God. So I watched the very beginning of your Strand event because it's on YouTube. Your talk about lesbian L versus Q.
Oh, okay.
And how us old timey L's are like, that was hilarious. That was amazing and so spot on. And the pubic hair, she leads off with pubic hair. I don't know. You can explain
it. For those
of us
who didn't hear it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think one of my life's charges, you know, people have purpose in their life. I think one of mine, and a big one, is to, like, educate young people, tell them that their pubes will eventually go gray. Because I think everyone knows that your hair on your head will go gray.
I never think about my pubes.
I mean, they also have a fairly good idea that if you have a beard, no matter who you are, what gender, that it will probably go gray. They know the hair on the head. You know, I think if they think about it, they may think the underarms will, but people don't stretch their imaginations to think about their pubes. I mean, maybe because, you know, we're so cute to think about the sexual as a thing of the young. And so when you think about your genitalia, you don't necessarily think about it aging. No one wants to think about sex and aging and sex and old people, although old people have sex.
Yeah.
You know, I once did a show.
I just want to say we're 2 minutes and 25 seconds in, and we've already said genitalia and old people have sex. Jamie, can we just take a break for a second and talk about breakfast cereal? It was like my favorite part of growing up. But of course, now that I know that all of my faves were loaded with sugar and junk and I can't eat them anymore or my insides will rebel.
Okay,
I'm
Robin,
so sad.
You need to just chill a little bit, because don't you remember I told you about Magic Spoon?
Jamie, I have a lot to remember. No,
okay,
I don't remember.
Well, Magic Spoon is this new cereal company that's discovered a way to recreate your favorite childhood cereals with zero sugar, 12 grams of protein, and only 3 net grams of carbs in each serving. It's your dream come true.
Jamie, I know. I'm just kidding. Oh, okay. Of course, I remember Magic Spoon. Because, they've got the 4 flavors that are based on the all-time classics, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry. I mean, it's like part of a pyramid, basically, of my childhood.
Food pyramid.
And no big deal. They also have a variety pack that lets you just try them all.
Which is great. Magic Spoon isn't messing around. They spent over a year working with the best food scientists and chefs in the world to recreate the taste and texture of classic sugary cereal, but without all that junk that makes them horrible for your health.
Plus, no big deal.
No big
Magic
deal.
Magic Spoon is gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, and GMO-free.
Wow.
But it tastes so incredible that you and your kids would never guess it was healthy. I mean, my kids have been flipping out for the cocoa and the fruity flavors, and I don't even feel bad when they're eating it. So it's like a win-win.
I know. And breakfast is important. And it's really important that they get a nutritious meal. Mm-hmm. So it's great.
Yeah. So folks at home, go to magicspoon.com/OCT to grab a variety pack and try it today. But be sure to use your promo code OCT at checkout to get free shipping.
Mm-hmm. And guys, Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. That's magicspoon.com/OCT and use the code OCT for free shipping. We thank Magic Spoon for sponsoring the podcast. Thank you, Magic Spoon.
We do.
Thank you.
And for bringing us back to our childhood nostalgia. Thank you.
But they do. I did a show and I was like, I was maybe like in my 20s or something or early 30s. And I was like, oh my God, will I still be having sex at like 45 or like 50? And I think two 80-year-olds from the audience goes, try 80.
Oh my God.
And I was like, really? And they're like, yep. I was like, all right. And now that I'm 50, I'm like, the desire is still there. It's just the time and the ability and the hips not there anymore.
I don't know what kind of sex you're having, but my hips could handle whatever. Whoa. I did. I don't know.
I don't want to talk about that. I'm projecting. I'm trying to like make sure that my hips last.
They're going to last.
So that's why I like stay still as much as I can during sex. Like I just lie there.
That's a
and,
good
you know,
tactic.
Try to get, maybe I, you know, I don't know, have like conversation, like soothing lesbian conversation. Because you
I
know
feel
that's
like, that could be
certainly not fucking pro-sex.
As like,
like
uninterested.
Do you wanna process something? Processing is anti-coming. Generally.
Not going to work.
No,
it's
not in the
work.
Same time. Like we could process today and have sex tomorrow.
Right, exactly.
But that generally speaking, in my experience, when you're processing, simultaneous processing and orgasming is not.
They don't work.
No, I mean, this is what I've found, but I mean, it may be my limitation.
You can't overthink it. You can't.
Yeah, but women are taught to overthink sex, right? That's another thing that happens more as you age. Mm. Because my body, like, you know, when I was like 27, I was quite bendy and like the lines were lines that fit within the confines of what they thought women should be bendy.
Right.
And
right.
having sex and mm-hmm. whatnot. So I felt, you know.
Feel hot.
I don't think I ever felt hot, but I felt like I was.
I think it's hard to feel hot when your legs are above your.
I felt I was gyrating within the confines of what was allowed as,
gotcha.
You know, as sexy.
Mm-hmm.
But then.
Risque.
Yeah. Then, you know, like the 40s came along and the child came along and no one notices the difference with my body. I think like most people don't notice when you put on weight or you get less bendy. But I've noticed.
Yeah.
You know, like the shit that they pour into us starts rising to the surface, because when you're like 25, you're like, oh my God, my nipple looks weird, or I think this
one boob
left
is
hip
than
is
the other.
Slightly higher than the right hip, or oh my God, I have a pimple on my butt. Like those things are like not that big a deal. But when you're like, okay, my boobs are now fully acquainted, I would say close friends with my knees. I mean, you know, and
I then had it, that thought last night. Like, what is happening? Why is it all the way down there?
But it does happen. It's so crazy that we all have this experience of what is happening when mm-hmm. it happens all the time. Like, why don't we have a fucking manual about getting older and like how we deal with our bodies and how is it that we can still be sexual and still feel sexy and still feeling like, you know, I mean, not this particular apartment, but the apartment that I lived in downstairs. Many a day I walked in with a lover. I dropped my dress as soon as the door was closed because I knew it was going to be a pleasant experience for you. But now with the ageism and the sizeism and all of the isms tied up, like I'm like trying to hold on to my dress until we get to the bedroom and
the
lights
are
dimmed. You know what I mean?
The lights are dimmed.
And I'm a feminist.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's about feminism. It's about how you feel about yourself.
But I'm saying that I go through my whole life thinking about like, fuck the patriarchy. I'm not affected by this stuff. I don't, you know, I never dressed up the way that people who participate in this like heteronormative construct of what women should be. I never did. Like, you know, I never wore makeup a lot. I never had to like match this thing with this or wear this with that, or you have to wear this shape dress or your body won't look this way. Or I never participated. I find that I'm, now that I'm like getting older though, like I'm considering lipstick. I don't wear lipstick.
I feel like you
look
lipstick
in the mirror
doesn't work.
Like, maybe some lipstick could help. You know what I mean? A little concealer under the eyes, or, you know, I don't know, like something for these lines. Like,
so do you think it's because of age? It's the age thing and not necessarily.
It's definitely age. Like,
it's just age.
I was never 25. I never, I mean, like I had the normal insecurities that women have, but. Mm-hmm.
It didn't faze you.
No, like, no. It never stopped me from like getting laid. It never like, now I like
Well, I wonder though if you were just like, I mean, I've followed your career, right? So, I'm sorry to hear that. But you seemed like a very confident younger person.
Yes.
Right?
Still, so I'm pretty confident
now, yeah, but like, but I'm saying, just not confident about my, like, my boobs and my ass crack.
But so for now, it's coming in for you for age. So I was like, not that person. Like, I was never confident with my body. I was never like, I'm not sure what the point I'm making is, but like, age just feels like something that's on top of something that was already there.
Gotcha. I mean, I suppose I'm saying that we all, particularly women, and I mean, I can talk about this from like women of color, like the notion of beauty. And I'm sure there are lots of white women who fall under this experience as well. Our bodies tend to be, I mean, I never had the rounder body either, but like because your body's round or dark, or you got a big booty, or because you have more curves, or because you don't have hair that falls straight, all of these things that, you know, your nose is shaped. So you have all of these ideas about how you're not beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, talking from a place of like, where I, as a young person, was very positive about myself and felt very good about being a Black woman and was affirmed in many ways. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that this was coming from a person who was relatively confident mm-hmm. in what I looked like, how I felt. But you always carry some bit of it, you know, you always carry some bit of it. And I think that you're right, that it's not that, oh, you get older and then you start feeling this. There's a seed that's planted at birth for us, particularly women. And mm-hmm. I mean, lots of men have it too, and lots of non-gender conforming people more than others even. But, you know,
when Jamie and I started this podcast, I was about 60 pounds heavier than I am now. I think I hit at the top point, like, I don't know, like almost 220 pounds. Like, I was like not in a good place. Both my parents are addicts and like food is my thing. And I had really had things under control, and then I had kids, and then I couldn't stay on a food plan because I was pregnant, and it kind of shook me. And then I went through a decade of like losing weight, gaining weight, losing weight, gaining weight. And last year, so I had gotten to a place where I had lost a lot of weight, and I'm taking this back to saggy boobs. I had a breast reduction, and it was like a big decision. Part of it was like, I've been throwing my back out for decades. Mm-hmm. But then part of it was like, insurance is going to lop these off and bring them right. And I had a hard thing after the surgery because I was like, I changed my body physically. Mm-hmm. And I looked in the mirror and I didn't see myself. Like, the week after was like, everyone kept being like, wasn't this the greatest thing you ever did? And for a minute I was like, uh-huh. Because I didn't recognize myself. Like, those saggy boobs had been with me for mm-hmm. a lifetime, mm-hmm. you know, of gaining weight, losing weight, gaining weight, losing weight, and then getting older mm-hmm. and having babies because I carried the kids. Mm-hmm. Well, after a week, it was turned into the greatest thing I ever did because it just freed me up and I felt more like myself. But I think that has been a journey with the weight loss too. And I don't know, it just makes me think about all this stuff about parenting and your body and age and like mm-hmm. what you're saying.
And I mean, even
and like, is that right? Or is that not right? Like, yeah. I made a change mm-hmm. and it ended up being a great thing for me. Like, I see myself now in a way I wanted to see myself for years, but it was for a minute. I called up my wife, Mary, and I said, do I look like I'm in a boy band? And she was like, what is happening with you right now? Because I just felt like all of a sudden I had this different silhouette. And it threw me because it wasn't me.
Yeah, so that's interesting because you're supposed to, in quotes, have this like joyous experience of like, okay, now I'm in the body I want. Mm-hmm. But then you also have to mourn the body you had, which you
carried me for years.
Relationship with, you know, you feel it, you know it, you can see it. In a lot of ways.
Kind of like childbirth.
How you lived in this body and then after the childbirth.
It's a different body and you're mourning the old body. And
it is a different body after.
There's a loss of control that's happened.
Because mm-hmm. you can't really do anything about it.
Nope. As women, we're mourning things constantly. The loss of our perky boobs.
It may be human to mourn things because things change. I mean, and maybe the greater lesson is that a life well lived is a life full of change.
Deep.
Not.
You just dropped the mic. That's so true.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, my grandmother always says, if you're not growing, you're dead.
Hey, Robin.
Mm-hmm.
You got any gifts for Valentine's Day planned?
Yeah. Oh my God, is Valentine's Day coming up already? Oh crap.
Relax, Robin. It's okay. Time is running out, but you can send your Valentine a one-of-a-kind, memorable, unexpected gift. Get this. You can wow them with bite-sized cupcakes from Baked by Melissa.
Okay, can I admit something?
What?
I saw the Baked by Melissa Valentine's Day gift and I bought it just because I love the packaging so much. Okay, it comes in this really cool box that says love and the uh-huh. cupcakes. Are you kidding me? They're perfect size cupcake, mm-hmm. perfect ratio of cake to icing. Mm-hmm. And they're these tiny little things and the flavors.
Good.
Are you kidding me?
They're good.
White chocolate, cookies and cream, red velvet, milk chocolate.
dulce de leche, and they even had vegan and gluten-free options. Come
Robin,
on.
Are you saying that you bought the Valentine's Day sampler for yourself?
Don't judge me.
Yes, you are.
I am saying that.
I'm not judging, but anyway, for folks who might want to actually get this for their partners or their loved ones or their kids, you know, check this out, you guys. Baked by Melissa offers 1 and 2 day shipping nationwide. But remember, the last day for standard shipping for Valentine's Day delivery is February 12th. At 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So
don't
you gotta
miss
get
that
in.
Deadline.
Don't miss it.
And folks, for Valentine's Day, just send your loved ones the perfect gift. Baked by Melissa. You go to bakedbymelissa.com/OCT and use the promo code OCT to get 15% off your order.
They're perfect.
That's a deal.
I mean, they're so good for kids, too, because you can just give them one
yes,
at night.
And they're not eating a
tiny.
Ton.
Yeah. And just, you guys, take advantage of this special offer for podcast listeners. There's 15% off at bakedbymelissa.com/OCT. Promo code OCT.
And just seriously, trust me, they're so good.
They're good. Okay, Robin. Okay.
I have a problem.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's interesting is I did this like self-helpy thing once and they talked about it's like the quadrinity and one of the things was your body and like you were supposed to do this whole thing where you thanked your body for exactly how it is. And I always had a real
really
hard time with that. And that's the thing now is like now I'm living with having lost a significant amount of weight. Like I got like the turkey thing on my arms and I can't do anything about that ever. Like that is there forever. And I went through a period where I was like, I damaged my body and I was feeling guilt and I was feeling all this stuff. And then I was like, I have to get to a place where I say this body carried me and helped me and it was with me when I was eating. Mm-hmm. You know, it never got mad at me. It just told me you got to stop. Like, and it told me by gaining weight. But it's like, that's a really hard thing to just like appreciate where you are as you are.
I think we all struggle with that daily.
You know, I certainly have lived in a small body my whole life and I understand the currency of that. And I don't think that I would ever do anything to jeopardize that because I understand how much currency that is in the world and not having it, how that's a loss of currency. Mm-hmm. And that in itself is an interesting,
really interesting perspective.
It's an interesting experience for
sure. A lot of thin people don't recognize that. Like when I was really heavy, I always knew that at any point in time, if someone got mad at me, they would call me fat. And I watched a guy almost
really?
Do it to me in the park and he saw my kids and he didn't. And he stopped himself and I saw the whole thing and I was just like, don't you fucking dare do that in front of my kids. Because they can, because it's the meanest thing they can say to you. So it's like interesting to hear a thin person recognize that that is a currency.
Everyone knows. I mean, I don't know if they can articulate it in this way or if they're willing to admit it, but everyone knows that just like your whiteness is currency.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
My being thin is currency. Like yeah. Just like whatever fetishized, exoticized ideas they have, people have about my accent, that has also currency here in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
But in another situation, it might not be currency. It might be just kind of trigger people's xenophobia about like immigrants. I mean, it's just as you move through different spaces. I'm currently in the process of trying to acquire a home because my rent in New York is just getting out of control. And it doesn't make sense to keep paying that amount and not buy a place if you can. But these amounts, I mean, I was talking to my friend last night. And, you know, she was making the point of saying the monies we talk about when we talk about buying houses is like monopoly money.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
especially
the hundreds
in New York.
Of thousands, the millions that, you know, of dollars that people spend. Like,
it's hard to fathom.
You know, yeah, your down payment is like people's salary for like years.
Or mm-hmm. It's a full house someplace else.
Yes.
Like your down payment could buy you a very large home in Ohio.
And so the way that we talk about like financial wealth or body or, you know, race or, you know, I get so fucking angry at whiteness all the time. And I struggle with it because I have such, you know, sometimes I have such warm, wonderful relationships with people who are white. It's this strange dichotomy that people of color, and I'm watching, I mean, you see my building, it's like when I moved mm-hmm. in here at first, you know, it was like a terrible apartment and everybody's like, why are you moving there? And my friends with any kind of like idea of what's appropriate, you know, they wouldn't come here because it's like, oh my God, to take the train and walk 4 blocks through that. You know, there's a lot of harassment and a lot of like people on drugs or whatever at the time, and maybe mostly people of color. And people would just not come. And now, like 20 years later, people are like, oh, you're going home, Stacey Ann? Okay, good. I'll hitch a ride with you because I'm going to dinner. or I'm going to go, you know, have a drink with a friend. They're coming to my neighborhood to hang out. And I'm watching all my black neighbors leave and watching like more and more white people come in and watching white friends buy in this neighborhood and watching like Zuri's classmates who were largely just in the downtown Brooklyn Heights area, the number of people who are now my neighbors growing. And I'm looking and I have to look further out. And so it doubles my commute to school with my kid. And I mean, aging is like a thing because I don't think that when I was in my 20s, I worried about so much like where I'm going to live. Because with aging, for some of us comes like parenting. Because, you know, I could live anywhere by myself, but having a kid,
and it's a game changer.
Yeah. And, you know, living this kind of like adult life, I'm like, when the fuck did I become an adult?
I thought
I was
going
to be, you know, young forever. Like, you know, it was promised to me. Like,
I still feel 12 inside.
I don't. Like, I'm not as bendy as 12.
Well, physically, no.
Now I'm old and can't afford anywhere to live. Like, that's the tragic moment, you know, like.
It's scary. And you have a good career. You have a successful career.
Sounds like you're going to say she had a sexy career.
I should have said sexy career.
If I had, you know,
a sexy career.
When I was younger, I had an option to have a sex career and I didn't. And, you know.
Any regrets there?
I don't know if I have regrets, but like, you know, I'm tallying the numbers.
You'd be richer now, but you.
Maybe I wouldn't be richer, but like, I don't know. Maybe I'd be more liquid.
You'd be more bendy, probably.
Maybe
you'd have joint issues.
No, I think, you know.
I had a high school friend who tried to get me into stripping with her.
Really?
Yeah.
The other day, another friend was talking about how we have ideas about sex,
right?
Like working in the sex industry. And she's like, sex is transactional all the time.
True.
Like, you know, you marry this man and therefore his money becomes your money. You have a child for him and all of a sudden he owes you money that he's supposed to give you. You marry into a family and you gain money. Like, so why can't the poor woman not marry the man, but
the
get like
wants.
A smaller amount of money for the space that, you know, like I can promise you to have sex with you for the next 30 years or 40 years. And then all of a sudden it's legal for you to give me money.
Right. My friend who stripped, it ended up that she had like sugar daddies.
For anybody listening, I just would like to say that I would like a sugar mommy.
You know, anyone out there?
Because I am an L, I'm not as fluid as these young people because
they're
I'm not
so
as bendy.
Fluid. They're so fluid.
You know what? But a little bit older is a little bit sexier, I think.
I think it's all sexy at different times. Because I find that I can look at a young person and be attracted to someone who's younger physically.
Mm-hmm.
But often when we sit and talk,
nothing.
My clitoris becomes a little softer. So, I mean, but, and that isn't for everybody, I just want to say.
No.
She'll take a wealthy,
rich, young,
a wealthy
20-year-old old lesbian.
I'm not that expensive. I just need a down payment on a Brooklyn house.
Okay, you got that, folks.
Like a down payment.
Or about the equivalent of an Ohio house. Just give it.
But I think...
Just give
or,
it.
Yeah. Or yeah, if you give me your Ohio house, I will sell it and pay down it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, I don't want to leave Brooklyn.
No.
Brooklyn is my home.
Right.
It's home to me.
It's hard to leave.
You know.
Going back to the sex workers, I think that... With the transactional thing, I think it's just what you are comfortable with. You know, like for me, I didn't feel comfortable going to going
you only
and dancing.
Wanted one person to, to look at you while you were dancing and having sex.
Right, exactly. Okay. And it's not, you know, like it's a comfort zone thing. Whereas my friend was like, psh, I don't care. I'm all good. This is great. And it was good for her. And she was happy. You know, so I think it is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, anybody who's going to have sex with me is going to have to deal with the fact that between... strokes, I will be thinking mortgage. One, mortgage. Two, mortgage. Three, mortgage. I mean, I don't. That's what I'm saying. Like, when you get older, like, I used to be able to, like, lie about in the bed.
Yeah, let
and
it
make,
go.
Make love for hours and think of nothing but this woman's armpit.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm like, okay, you've got really nice armpits. Your hips are astounding, but I...
Mortgage.
Have to look at Zillow.
Mortgage.
In a second. Like, can we just have sex later while after I'm just going to look at this one property that I think it's a good deal.
Yeah. But do you think it's kids that do that to us? Is it kids having children or is
it's
it
not just
age?
Having children. It's having children and aging and like coming to your... You could like sleep on a couch in your
20s.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be on a couch when I'm 50.
No.
My hips
no.
and my back.
No.
And you know.
I remember the moment Mary and I went and crashed at someone's house and we were like sleeping on some ridiculous pullout couch. And some dog was like licking our face. And we were both, and I turned to her and I was like, why are we not in a hotel? And it was just because for so long I was in the habit of crashing in people's houses. And I was like, we can afford a hotel. And we immediately went and stayed in the hotel the next night. I was like, and that was it. I was like, I don't crash anymore.
We don't do that anymore.
I'm like, what is that?
That's I think it's just aging. And then what you get accustomed to, like I go to people's houses and like the sheet is not a high thread count. And then I'm like, what is this Brillo pad?
Where's my complimentary water?
The things that start to matter, the toilet paper.
I know. I don't want to wipe my vagina. And then before you know it, I am fingering myself. This is not.
I know what you mean.
I want toilet paper.
I don't know what
that
means.
Resist my finger on the wipe.
Exactly. Or your butt. Same.
God help us from toilet paper that will resist when you're wiping your butt.
You need good Q-tips.
Yeah, I know.
Somebody needs a resist campaign for toilet paper.
Yes.
Like, take it, Charmin.
My wife, Anne, has her Aunt Rita. She's with us a lot. She's in her 80s and she's always saying, she says to Rose, our daughter, all the time, I'm going to teach you about aging because nobody taught me about aging and it's hell.
Yep.
It's awful.
Yep.
And she's like on a mission to teach young people about how hard aging is.
Yeah, I hear your vagina gets like mad dry, like for most of us.
Yeah.
This is what's going to happen to you young people. Your pubes are going to go gray. Your vagina will go, you know, whatever. Your boobs will, I mean, the whole situation.
The boobs just sag.
So work out and eat right. Eat your vegetables. Don't
hope for the best.
But, well, how do you know, don't overwork out like I do. Because then you
that sounds like a just problem. Healthy. Like take a hike, you know, while you're walking around looking for houses. You know, take a hike around the neighborhood, like, you know, run up and down the stairs, go down to the basement, check it out, check out the walls. I mean, it's a good workout.
Oh, and tell me how you talk to your daughter about body and stuff like that. Like, what kind of conversations you guys have?
Well, it's been happening for her whole life in many ways. But now it's got to be like specific. Like, I think I'm navigating, like, at what age do you stop allowing them to shower together?
Mm-hmm. That's the like friends.
That's an interest because you know, like they're four. Can I have a shower? They're all jumping in. But is it okay at 9 and 10 and 11?
They decide.
You think? So if they want to shower together at like 11 and 12, you're okay with it?
I don't. You know what? I was smaller. So I didn't have like the body issues until like middle school. And I remember always wanting to still take a bath with my friends.
And your friends are like, hell no.
And then my friends all of a sudden were like, no, I don't want to do that. And they got weird about it and I didn't understand it. It was their decision. And I was like, let's do it. Come on, let's get in the bath, you know?
So, I mean, so
my kids have never showered with other kids other than each other. I'm like, I'm flabbergasted by like, what is happening in your house that people are like, come on over for play date. You can shower.
Right?
Yeah.
And you have two?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, by the way, I have one. So like if I say you can't shower with anybody but your siblings, she'd be in the bath with the dog all the time.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing. I stopped the sibling thing when I came in and I heard this weird laughter and I was like, and then I went in and I was like, and I realized she was like smacking his penis. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was like, what's going on? And my voice went like 7 octaves. Like I did not handle it at all well. And she was just like, I was like, you shouldn't do that. And then she was like, but it makes him laugh. And I was like, right. Let's separate baths. Well, and then that was it.
And you don't think a conversation is necessary? I'm asking.
No, should have been. This was my own baggage. Like I come in with my own baggage separated
it. Let's talk about what it's like if we didn't have the baggage. What would be the appropriate take?
I think that you say, and we did do this. Like that's his body parts. They're private. And that's, we don't touch each other's privates. Like,
and then she
until
says,
until there's like.
Because Zuri asked me the other day, like what makes that private, but not my elbow private?
Right.
Oh, Jesus.
And what did you say?
I was like, I think people have like a lot of different feelings about it. And that's why, you know, you have to keep it private, not because it's like inherently private or because there's something that says you have to keep your vagina private. But I'm saying like people have weird feelings about it. And so just to keep people's weirdness off of it, then we cover it up and we keep it safe. I try to tell her like nothing's wrong with your body. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like after a while, it comes like the toilet paper that won't resist. It won't, you know, it doesn't hold. Like the theory starts ripping, you know.
Well, because eventually you have to get to talk about sex. And you have to talk about what happens in the vagina.
I would have talked about sex. I would have said.
But how old is she? She's seven.
She's seven. She's eight now. But I mean, she's eight. And so, but she does have a sense of like, I mean, we have talked about sex where she's like, okay. And I say sex is where people touch each other. And a lot of it happens around like the private parts.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I would have just said, because I think those parts are part of the sexual process. And I think I would have said something around that.
The private parts, I mean, my breast is not just about sex. My vagina is not just
about
sex.
No, for sure.
It's not. But I'm at the place where I think I have to start talking to Rose about sex. And I don't know how to start. She's six.
Just get a book.
So
there's one called What Makes a Baby?
Uh-huh.
That's a really good
beginner. That's the one we started with.
She knows all about the donor and the uterus.
The egg and the sperm.
And the egg.
Yes,
and the
but then the question will come like it did with
Zuri.
How
do they get it in?
How do they get together?
Yes.
Yeah. And then I say, there are lots of ways to do it. And the first time she asked, she was maybe like five.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first time she asked, I said, well, sometimes, you know, lots of ways to do it. And the way that it happened with you is that the doctor put the egg and the sperm together for me. Mm-hmm. And then maybe like, another time when she asked, I said, well, maybe it's one of your parents, maybe it's a friend, someone can put the sperm in. And then the last time she said, okay, is that the only way to do it? I said, well, sometimes it can come directly from the penis into the vagina and that would require sex. She goes, like, a penis goes into the vagina? I said, yes. Well, the vagina, when you get excited and you really like somebody and it feels good and it feels safe, then I tell her that the vagina can stretch.
Wow.
And then it can go inside there. But I think that you have to feel really safe and you have to be old enough to understand. And then I say, like, for some people it hurts. Mm-hmm. And then you have to be okay with, like, being hurt in that way. But at the same time, like, it's like very complicated and it's a lot of things, a lot of moving parts. I'm, like, sticking with
biology.
The clinical. Yeah. I'm standing with the clinical scientific. Because the more she can take in about what the thing is actually and not all the baggage that comes with it.
The stuff we put on.
Yes. And then the time will come when she'll have her own, you know, baggage, good or bad, good baggage, bad baggage. Some of it, she'll come into it on her own. Like if she develops normally or she develops in a safe space, she'll come to a place where she'll be like, oh, that's what happens when I get excited.
And also if she still has questions, if you have the book and you start reading it, she'll bring it up when you're talking about it.
And so there's one book called What Makes a Baby that really kind of like clinically tells kids where babies come from. And you don't have to make up a crazy story and it's not traumatizing and it's not crazy for you. It's very funny. In fact, it's like, oh, the word uterus, it has you and us in it. So you'd think everybody has them, but not everybody has one. I mean, that kind of thing.
And it's not gender.
And then the one that's more specific for the ones who are pre-puberty and approaching puberty is sex is a funny word. There's one called Sex is a Funny Word. And that one, they can kind of read on their own. And it's all graphics. It's not like heavy. It's like funny. And like you have different kinds of people in it saying all kinds of stuff. And you have people that are like, I know all about sex. And the other one's like, no, you don't. And the kinds of conversations that kids tend to have.
That's good. I'm going to get both of them. Just put them on the shelf.
What Makes a Baby? And
because I'm on the cusp right now. Like, you know.
How old are you? 6 and 2,
she's
right?
6 and 2. So yeah, he's so not, six, you know. Yeah.
So, but
she's he's like, totally ready.
What Makes a Baby to both of them.
Yes, totally. And then the other thing is we're raising these two boys, you know.
That doesn't seem foreign to me. In some ways, that's, like raising a girly girl seems foreign to me. Oh, like I was so such a tomboy that like having a girl, I'm like, and she is just such a girl. Like she just, it's what she gravitates to. It's like, it's not
she's
getting in
pink.
Our house.
She's
like,
all into pink.
Yeah, she just loves unicorns and twirling. And she has been that joyous and free thing since she was little. Like she wanted us to go try on clothes for her, like girly clothes.
For you guys to try clothes.
She made us go to Macy's and she had to pick out everything. We told her we would put on anything she wanted to. Mm. So she just kept coming at us with these dresses and did like these really tacky, sparkly things. And we'd be like, all righty, let's put it on.
He didn't buy
it. So
any
nice to have a partner in that, eh?
Like, it was funny.
Because for me, I would just feel so stressed by that. Like,
really?
I would need to have somebody there to make it fun for me.
Right. Yeah.
And not just like.
That's true. Because we were like laughing every time she handed us something. We were like, oh my God. We
could laugh at it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Or me, and I would be like stuck in the, oh my God, I think I'm doing something terrible to the kid. I'm trying to make her into like, you know.
The second guessing must be.
Oh my God, the second guessing
when you're alone in it.
Yes.
I can imagine.
The pros of being alone is that you're alone and therefore the decision is alone.
It's all yours.
So I don't have to do any of that like over-processing that lesbians do. I don't have to do any of that.
My wife and I over-process
consulting.
It.
You are not alone. Lesbians over-process. Like women have been like socialized to process.
We've been
trained. We process and process and process and process.
I'm really interested if our sons, like, I'm always like, and what words do you have to put on that? I'm like, is he going to become like a guy that talks or will society stop
that? My friend raised three boys. She's like almost 60 now and she's got like three boys, two of them fully grown and one almost done baking. And like two of them are like super processors, the older ones.
Oh, wow.
But the younger one is like, don't fucking talk to me. I don't want to talk about nothing.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
So
yeah.
It's the kid.
I don't know if it's just the kid. I think it's also order. Could be like when they get you. Because you're like young and in your like prime of your lesbian processing, you're like, oh my God, I just want to process. Let's talk about that. And you have all the time in the world. And then you turn
and then
into like a 40-something-year-old, 50-year-old lesbian who's raising like a 10-year-old. And you're like, you know what?
I'll figure it out. Go ask your friends.
Go ask your friends.
Like, why don't you
read that book?
Ask your brothers.
Okay, whatever, man. Just Google it.
It's on YouTube. Stay away from the porn.
Oh, my God. There is pressure, though, raising boys, especially as lesbians.
Because you got to raise good men.
I want to raise a good man.
It's important that we raise good men. And, mm-hmm. like,
the and
men
you feel like you failed if you raise one that looks like the ones that you're trying to avoid.
Oh, no, yes. And we are both raising two white men, too, on top of it. Two like super very white boys.
Like glow-in-the-dark white
babies.
You know,
they look like the kids who do the school shootings. Like, they I don't know. Like, I'm scared.
It's an important thing. Like, I've never heard it said out loud like that by a white person, but it is true.
Yes.
And we gotta, like...
How do we make sure that these boys grow up to be...
Not jokers.
Yeah. Yes. And respectful of gender. Respectful of color. Respectful of just...
Just
what
raise
are
them
do?
Around. Like, I mean, you know, make sure they live in a community that they have relationships with people of color, that they have relationships
and
with women other than
the
you.
The conversation has to happen all the time, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I always say to them, and I say this to both of them, but I think I might focus it more at him because I think of like the fucking frat boy with the hat backwards.
I don't want
like the gel head hat kids.
Fucking bro.
I'm always
bro.
Like, I'm like, I want you to be the boy that stops your friend from doing some asshole thing. I don't say asshole to my kid because I'm picturing when they're 16 and somebody with a video camera doing something to a girl. And I know that's like dark, but it's, I want him to be the one that fights peer pressure and walks in and goes, you guys are dicks. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. Like, she's unconscious.
Absolutely. Oh, like, absolutely. But it's important for them to have respectful, strong relationships with you so that disappointing you becomes a part of the equation that they consider
their
when
inner
they act.
Judge.
Mm-hmm. You know, I see like how I love my kid and how we have a relationship that she is often very much cued into what it is that I think or feel.
You know, I was so close with my mom and my main goal as a child was to not disappoint my mom. I was so super focused on like, I wanted her to be proud of me always.
But you know, like, and the trick, especially for us single moms, the trick to do it is to not overdo it because sometimes, you know, single moms.
Then it's smothering.
Yes, we smother the kid and then, or not even smothering, but like you just don't work hard at like providing that space that can give the kid some independent thought. Mm. I worry about that for Zuri also because I'm such a strong personality as a parent and such a, you know, I have all these strong. Can you imagine?
Stop it.
You never know what happens when you go away, man.
You become a doormat.
I become a doormat. But so we get to this place where, and this is why community is important. And these metropolises that like displace people and move people out of communities. And then you are left raising this one person or just you and this person. Mm-hmm. And these two people are this one kid in the house. And you have this like artificial relationships with other people.
Right.
Yeah. You know, these acquaintanceship relationship with these people. I mean, you have to have people who have real relationships. And so...
You have to build that village.
Yes. And so that community, so they know how to navigate in community. And so your opinion isn't everything. Mm-hmm. But I was saying that for those of us who do have a kid who your opinion matters, then you can use it for good, as in like encourage them to do good things, encourage them, you know, and praise them when they do the thing that is like good and stand up, you know, like Zuri, on any given day, you'll ask her to tell you about herself. She'll tell you, you know, I'm a black girl, I'm beautiful, I'm strong, and I'm an upstander, not a bystander. Ooh. And she loves that. Like, you know, that's about herself.
Yeah.
She'll say it every chance she gets. Like, I never stand by and let anybody else get bullied. I always stand up for people.
Oh my God, I'm going to steal. Great. We were just having a bullying conversation this morning. Like, upstander, not a bystander. Can we steal that and footnote?
Absolutely. I love Zuri's, that. It's Zuri's thing. She says it all the time. That. She goes, I am an upstander. I'm not a bystander.
That's because that encapsulates it perfectly.
Absolutely.
What we want from them.
From people who can easily step into the larger majority.
Yeah.
You know, that can become quite oppressive to the minority. Mm-hmm. And that minority can be like LGBTQ people. It can be people of color. It can be immigrants. It can be like the girl who everyone thinks is dumb or
the girl
the
kid
who
with glasses
is,
or
who is chubby or like just... All of those, like, you know, intersections of minority, you have to get your kid to start seeing that as not okay to, like, watch them be bullied or be picked on.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Jamie, do you know what I find interesting?
What's that?
most guidance with fertility is just all like, wait and see.
Oh, totally.
But guess what? That doesn't work for us LGBTQ folks.
Nope.
Right? We don't know about the state of our fertility till we decide to have a baby. And then we have to go to some expensive fertility doc to find out.
Right. Because you can't find out on accident.
No, you sure can't.
But what I don't get is why we have tools to help us plan and track everything, like our finances, mm-hmm. the steps you have to take, careers, your schools. But yeah. we don't have that for fertility.
Well, Jamie, guess what?
What?
Good news.
What?
That's why modern fertility was created.
Mm.
It's easy and affordable way to test your fertility hormones at home with a simple prick of your finger. So you just mail it in with a prepaid label and you'll get your personalized results within 10 days.
Oh, wait, you know what? I do know about them.
Yeah.
And that can save you tons because traditional testing at the doctor can run over $1,000. Seriously.
Yeah.
But modern fertility, get this, it only costs $159 to get the same information. And guess what, fans of ITOCT? If you go to modernfertility.com/OCT, you can get $20 off your test.
Oh, and also, by the by, if you have an HSA or an FSA, you can totally use those dollars on modern fertility.
That's amazing.
So you'll get insight into how many eggs you have, hormone levels, any reproductive red flags, and that's just critical. And the results, they go in depth into what every hormone means. And you can also talk one-on-one with a fertility nurse to review your results and options for next steps.
Which is important because some of that stuff is confusing.
Yes.
So if you want kids today or maybe one day, and why wouldn't you? Because you're listening to this podcast. Yeah. You need information to make the decision that's best for you.
Yep. And great news for our listeners. Right now, Modern Fertility is offering our listeners $20 off the test when you go to modernfertility.com/OCT. That means your test is going to cost $139 instead of hundreds or thousands that it could cost to the doctor's office.
Seriously. That's right. Get $20 off your fertility test when you go to modernfertility.com/OCT. modernfertility.com/OCT.
Check your eggs.
Check your eggs.
It's like I look to see when they do something that I didn't make them do. This is like a weird name drop, but like through the Amy Schumer podcast, I was in a room with Bill Murray and she said, what's the worst thing that parents do? And he said, say thank you, say please. He said, because you're not letting your kid, they're not coming to it of their own. They're just regurgitating what you told them to do. And I've been thinking about that a lot because I was like, do I believe that? Because it doesn't have to start with you telling them to do that. Like, it's just like, I keep thinking about it. But then I saw Henry across the train, like we were apart from each other, like get up and offer his seat to like an old person. And I was like, God damn it. Yes. I was like, I was so excited because he did that without me going, get up, give her your seat.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I think
was
it started,
pregnant?
She was just old.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's an old person. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. I missed that. I thought like, oh, he's just like giving girls a seat, which is like also another thing that like, I'm not sure is all. Good.
He's but, not
oh,
quite that Rico swapper.
Great. He's only fantastic. Eight. Good job. Is his name Jamie?
No,
that's my
Henry. Okay.
Henry. Sorry.
It would be weird if I named him Jamie.
There's Jamie. I mean, it is a boy's name. So.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know if it's boys or girls. Zuri will tell you that there's no such thing as a girl's name or a boy's name or a girl's toy or a boy's toy. Ha!
Yeah, my daughter
if
actually.
Only these ovaries could talk.
My daughter says that too now, and I'm proud of that too. We say that to her all the time, yet I did just say that's a boy's name. So.
Yeah. But know. I mean, it's we're all in it. We're all in it. I mean, it's like, constant. You know, we have internalized racism, internalized homophobia, internalized, you know, sexism. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all in there. And so. The process of doing the work of like breaking down these things is to hold each other accountable and to have conversations that can be frank and like you trust the people who you have them with so that when I say that, you don't feel like, oh God, why are you saying that to me? Right. Like, I know.
My daughter just, we're walking home from school yesterday and she said, we're learning about that man because of next month. What's his name? I said, Martin Luther King. She said, yes, it used to be really bad. It used to be really bad and he fought to make it better. And I want to be as frank and real with her as possible. You know, it's so important that she's learning about Martin Luther King. But I said, well, you know, it's still not fair. It's not fair now, you know, and then I'm trying to go into that conversation and I get stumped and I'm not sure how to navigate it. And I want her to be aware of her whiteness. Mm-hmm. And I want her to be like everything we've just been saying, compassionate to everyone out there. And so like my question to you as a Black woman, how would you have white parents talk to their white kids?
I think you tell them that we're on a quest to make the world more fair.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people did some work before and now we don't have slaves in the same way, but like just like your friends, when they're playing on the playground, not everybody is fair all the time because it's human nature to be unfair. And so As long as we live, there will be things to fight for and things to correct and things to upstand for mm-hmm. and not be bystanding, you know. So I feel like you just kind of tell them that we are on a trajectory towards a world we are creating. Like mm-hmm. I tell Zuri, like there's always, because sometimes she does that too. She's like, you know, Martin Luther King's changed everything, and I have to remind her. And even with my reminding her all the time, she still comes back to it and says, you know, it used to be terrible, but now it's good. And I'm like, nope.
No, it's not.
It's not necessarily good. It's better. And in a lot of places, lots of people benefited from the work of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and Rosa Parks and all those people who did really hard work. But there's still work to be done, because even when your teacher says to the students, stop playing that and don't be unfair, like tomorrow, there's other stuff that other people will do that the teacher always has to step in, because human nature. Mm-hmm. And everybody likes to be better than someone, or to be smarter, or to have more than someone else. And so it's important for us as a community to keep checking, not just those around us, but ourselves. Because even if we're good today, tomorrow we might not be good.
Mm-hmm. And everybody slips up from time
everybody
to time.
Everybody slips up, right. And mm-hmm. then the people who slip up more tend to slip up even more, right. because they get the benefit of whatever the slip right. up is that they gain from.
Yeah. And then my daughter's like Donald Trump. You know, and then yes. we go to there.
Yes, yes, so. Yes.
And then
we almost got to the whole thing without mentioning the orange-headed Freddy Krueger.
Well, my daughter, it's all my daughter's fault, because she went to him. She was like Donald Trump. He's bad.
Yeah, my kids do that too.
And then I'm trying to explain. Oh, it's so
layered. He's also like a product. Like, I mean,
yes,
he's a person
exactly.
whose mom didn't teach him how to be better. So any, you know, like white boy could grow up to be a mm-hmm. Donald Trump if you're not like cognizant of it. It's not like Donald Trump is just bad. It's just that he's a product of his environment, a product of the world we live in, a product of the systemic racism yes. that is like, you know, kind of like insidious and like, you know, filled with tentacles and veins
it's
that run through everything
right,
yeah, that we do.
Yeah.
Andy DeFranco said that, you know, we're complicit just by breathing.
Yes.
You know, and certainly as Americans, I mean, what we're doing to the planet, we are fucking complicit.
So scary. Yeah. So how about that 70 degree day? 2 days ago.
70 degree. And two years ago, we had it too. 77. I mean, I remember Christmas Day is my birthday. So, so 2 days ago, it was like 70, 75 or something. I remember I was outside in a t-shirt that day.
Yeah. Yeah, my kids were playing outside in t-shirts the whole day on Sunday. I couldn't believe it. We raked leaves for fun.
All right. So I'm going to read this one called Not My President.
Okay.
Yes.
Every time I step to a microphone, I develop an uncontrollable urge to shout, Donald J. Trump is not my president. And that's not just because I didn't vote for the fool, not just because he's become the latest tool members of the contemporary clan pull out from their modern day sheets to remind us of when their cloths covered this land with the brutal hand of white racist terror. If you've ever had to dress down some melanin challenge motherfucker talking about all lives matter, raise your right hand and say amen. So you know exactly what I mean when I say Donald J. Trump cannot be recognized as no motherfucking president. First of all, he's been breathing on this planet for 70 years and still has the vocabulary of a fucking third grader. Not to mention, his mouth always looks to me like an incontinent asshole that can't hold its own bullshit in, spewing the septic defecation of ignorance and discrimination, contaminating the already polluted air with inarticulate entitlement, steady providing validation for all them other white men who feel like equal opportunity for anyone else means we are trying to motherfucking oppress them. Donald J. Trump could never be my president because he began his political career by questioning the legitimacy of the first black president and elected in a country built upon the hardworking backs of African Americans. He could never be my president because he had the gall to call for Barack Obama's birth papers as if this were 1831 and he was one of them cruel white men free to grab any black body and demand documents. In the America we say we are currently fighting to create, men like that can no more lead us than can a predominantly white police force protect the black descendants of the very brown bodies they enslaved to gain the racial advantage they refuse to let go of, no matter how obvious it is that in America, race and opportunity are linked, like poverty and the prison system, like rape and a woman's right to choose, like who has wealth and who pays the least taxes, like gerrymandering and who gets the right to vote. It's time for poor white folks to admit they've all been sold a 6 for a 9. This con artistry of race and sex and economy isn't new. Donald J. Trump is just another white knot in the noose they keep tying around the necks of the disadvantaged majority. Just another fairy tale in the elaborate inheritance of lies they sell to to anyone who isn't rich and white and longing for the good old days when racially cloaked narratives of nationality was the only history available to average Americans, fed to them to keep them from being woke, to keep them from poking too deeply into whose pockets most of the wealth that ordinary people work for from 9 to 5 every day in this country goes. Black people have had enough of this systematic bullshit. Between the 500 years of unrelenting racism and the recent rise of this fake-ass, overtanned, idiotic orangutan, black bodies have got no more tears left to cry. We ready to try some next-level shit. To resurrect some Black Panther, Angela Davis, Asata Shakur shit. I'm willing to bet the same is true for the rest of y'all motherfuckers. I'm willing to bet you know that the state of things as they are is unacceptable. Having spent my whole life fighting for better than this, I refuse to give deference to this walking, shameful evidence of what fear and prejudice and a little Russian interference can birth in a nation obviously asleep at the wheel of our own democratic elections. Donald J. Trump could never be my president because his tenure in the White House is a result of unchecked sexism, a culture of rape, and the ever-present undercurrents of a newly emerging 21st century Ku Klux Klan. Donald J. Trump is not my president because he wants to disappear my Muslim neighbors, because he wants to deport Mexican-American families, because he fails to recognize that the only Americans who are not immigrant Americans are native fucking Americans. He is not my president because he sexualizes his own daughter. He will never be my president because I want to clearly demonstrate to my daughter that a man who boasts about grabbing women by their vaginas without their permission does not ever deserve her respect, no matter who he is or how rich he says he is. That even though that egotistical airhead masterminded and pulled off the greatest political coup in the history of modern elections, he remains nothing but an illegitimate, embarrassing burden. I hope we don't have to carry for the whole 4 years. Every time I see this orange snake slithering around on my screen, I want to break the fucking TV, rip it off the wall and let it fall from my fifth floor apartment. I wish I could just close my eyes and pretend that none of this is happening. But if we do not keep our eyes open, the consequences will be catastrophic. Every kind of resistance is necessary. When the arm of injustice persists, we have to keep changing tactics. We have to develop new ways to resist. We have got to find a way to get rid of this motherfucker. We cannot be discouraged by these political tricks of distraction. Even if it takes longer than we anticipated to get this fucker off our TVs, out of office, and outside our collective consciousness, we have to keep the truth of what we know. This buffoon cannot lead, so we cannot follow him to the sordid places he would encourage us to go, no matter how normalized the actions of this incredibly imbecilic and inhumane administration, no matter how numb we become to what the news anchors say. You have to say something different to yourself. Donald J. Trump is not my president. You have to say it to yourself. You have to say it to everyone. He is not my president, will never be my president. You have to make that shit mantra. You have to say he has never been my president. You have to say it to your fish, to your parrot. You have to say it to all the Republicans who keep cheering this man on. You have to say it over and over and over again. And one day, when everyone else sees that this man is no more than a snake oil salesman, no more than a Cheeto-dusted Freddy Krueger invading every aspect of our lives, like all the great walls of divisiveness built before him, he will fall. And he will then reveal the yellow bellies of those who brought him to power. And whoever is responsible, be it Vladimir or one of them funny-looking Trump children, whoever it is, that Iago motherfucker will have to answer to the rest of humanity for this small-handed wrinkle in this bumbleclot warp in time.
I love that.
Thank you so much for taking the time today. This was incredible.
Oh, man.
Thank you for
now
coming.
Now I want to hear it like a million more.
I know. Well, I mean, I feel like people can buy your book.
Well, you that's know. True. Let's yeah. not it's let's called, not give it all away.
It's called Crossfire.
That's Stacey one way to
help her get a mortgage.
Help me get a mortgage.
She needs that down payment, folks.
Yeah. Sugar so mama. Everybody and go book out purchases.
And get that book. Woo! Stacey Ann Chen.
Oh, she is like so freaking intense. I love her so much.
Firecracker rocket shit.
I just like love talking to her.
I know. You could talk for days. Yeah. And you know what? When you talk to her and she looks at you, you really feel like she's mm-hmm. like
listening,
looking into you,
and just like really thinking about what you're saying.
Yes, yes.
It's just like she's
which is
not,
why I feel like, oh my God, Jamie, make sure you're saying what you meant to say.
I just feel like there's no bullshit with her,
no,
which is what I love.
No, she doesn't bullshit.
No,
at all.
I love that.
That's a skill.
But listen, you know, what's really cool is after we left, we talked about how Zuri had did that whole upstander, bystander thing. Mm-hmm. And she gave us a clip.
Being upstander, not a bystander.
Yeah. From Stacey Ann and Zuri have this thing called the Living Room Protest. It's on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And she gave us a clip from one of those with Zuri talking about it. So let's take a listen to that because it's pretty amazing.
It's really good.
Let me just say something.
Okay.
Like, let's say if a friend is sad at school, mm-hmm. and I walk over and say, and just stand there watching the person cry.
Mm-hmm.
That is not being a good friend.
Okay, so tell me what.
It's kind of like a bystander.
A bystander, okay.
And then if someone's sad at school and I come over and try and make them feel better.
Mm-hmm.
That's being an ally or something.
That's being an ally. Okay. All right.
And,
so an ally is kind of...
being a stander.
It's being a stander and an ally. Okay.
That kid.
I know.
I mean, it's like if anyone could be more powerful than Stacey Ann Chan, it's going to be Zuri.
She's really clearly like thinking through it as she's saying it. Like she's like her mom.
Yeah.
Like she's a true thinker.
Oh, it's so powerful.
What am I saying? I don't even know what I'm saying.
You don't.
Stacey Ann Chan is listening to this like, what the fuck, Jamie?
Well, it's just like every time we start with Stacey Ann Chan, she's always like, what the fuck is wrong with you two? And we're always like, we don't know. Oh, I love it. Now listen, guys, you know, this is normally the time where we would ramble on about our social mm-hmm, media and all that crap and our Patreon community, but we're not.
So, you know, follow us on the social, join our Patreon community.
But more importantly, go out and buy Stacey Ann yes. Chin's new book. It's called Crossfire, A Litany for Survival.
It's powerful.
All right.
Eggs. Ovaries. Out.
If these ovaries could talk, they would say, eggs, ovaries, out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.